Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is Master of Merch, Chris Tanay. First of all, I don't know if you're aware, but there are 158 million tracks online. Every streaming service, if you take them all and put them together, they have 158 million songs. Yeah, it would take us several lifetimes to get through all those, but that's not the point. 67.1 million of those tracks have attracted 10 or fewer streams apiece. That's 42% of all the tracks available have 10 or less plays. But it gets even worse. There are 38 million songs online that received zero plays last year. 38 million didn't get a play, and that's 24% of the entire catalog of songs that's online. Now, Spotify is very aware of this, and they pay a lot of money to store all their songs. It's been worked out that they pay around $150 million a year just in storage services. And of course, there's shareholders that want them very much to make money. So then they turn around and they look and they see, well, so many of the songs that we have online get very few plays or no plays at all. Why should we store them and pay the money when no one's really getting any benefit from it? So this is something I've talked about in the past, but it's getting closer and closer. Get ready to pay a fee if you don't get enough plays. Now here's the thing. Spotify will come to you and say, okay, you didn't get any plays. We're very happy to keep this song online, but you have to pay for the privilege. No play? Then you have to pay. And if you decide no and those songs go away, well, it won't really matter because very few consumers would even notice. So Spotify says, well, we used to have 100 million tracks in our library, but now we only have 80 million tracks. That won't make a dent in anybody's perception of the service. So this may very much be like Twitter, where you have to pay for that blue badge. Well, the same thing might happen here, where in order to make sure that your songs are online, you're going to have to pay for that privilege. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. Also, I'm pleased to announce that the fifth edition of my Recording Engineer's Handbook is now available. It's totally updated and includes new sections on the latest cutting-edge recording technology, multiple ways to mic over 70 different instruments, a new chapter on recording immersive audio, new hitmaker engineer interviews, and much more. Get your copy at a special discounted price at go.bobbyosinski.com/recording-engineer. That's go.bobbyosinski.com/recording-engineer. You can also find it on Amazon and Apple Books. And remember, you can learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news when you sign up for my newsletter at bobbyosinski.com. There you'll also find out about openings for my latest online classes and special events. That's bobbyosinski.com. Now, anyone who's ever used a Neve console is a fan, and you know how good things can sound going through an old Neve. But Rupert Neve actually sold the company in 1972. He was still consulting for various companies, he was still fixing his consoles, and George Martin came to him and said, "Can you build me the finest input modules ever made?" So Rupert started the Focusrite company and came up with his ISA 110 preamp EQ module, and later the ISA 130 dynamics module. And these cartridges would just slip into a Neve console. Well, these became so popular that there were studios that came to Rupert and said, "We'd like a full console based on these modules." So Rupert then made the Forte console, and that appeared in 1988. There were only two of these consoles manufactured. One went to Electric Lady in New York, and the other went to Master Rock in London. The problem was they were so expensive that they forced Focusrite out of business. So about that time, Phil Dudridge, who had just sold Soundcraft Electronics, had a bunch of money and nothing to do. He bought all the Focusrite assets in 1989. And of course, the Focusrite console already had a huge following, so there was a big demand for those consoles again. So he started building them, but only 10 consoles were ever made. The largest one, maybe the largest music console ever built, was installed in Bop Studios in South Africa in 1991. Now, this may be the most expensive studio ever built. There is no expense spared. They don't have the exact figures, but it's been determined that there were somewhere between $22 and $91 million spent on this studio. So you'd think, wait a second, this is South Africa. How did that happen? Well, the new South African government wanted to raise the profile of the country, and they wanted to make it a recording destination. The money came from the government pension fund. A couple of years later, there was a whole new government that came in, decided this wasn't a good deal, and leased Bop Studios to South African Broadcasting. They operated the studio for about 7 years, but then the lease wasn't renewed. So what happened was, power was turned off, doors locked, and everybody forgot about it for about 20 years. Over the years, there were lots of tries to resuscitate the studio. None were successful. However, there was this fantastic console that was there, and it was still in pretty good shape. It was recently purchased by Platinum Studios in Phoenix and installed in a brand new studio there. So how big is this console? It's 26 feet wide. 26 feet. This is bigger than most rooms. It's 116 channels with 16 aux ends, and it was completely wired in silver cabling. So before they could install the console, they had to completely recap the console, which means all of the capacitors, and there's a lot of them, had to be replaced. Plus, 4,600 LEDs, they were all replaced as well. So this is one of the biggest and best-sounding consoles ever made, and it's finally back online in Phoenix. My guest this week is Chris Denae, who helped artists like the Rolling Stones, Taylor Swift, Keith Urban, Luke Bryan, and Iron Maiden sell their merch products. Chris knows what sells, why it sells, and what doesn't, and he's put together his Rock Your Merch Bootcamp to make sure that artists and bands make their merch stand out and not make some common mistakes. During the interview, Chris and I spoke about working in Taylor Swift's warehouse, what most artists don't get about merch, how to market your merch, how merch has changed through the years, the most important thing you can do to sell merch, and much more. I spoke with Chris via Zoom from a studio in Nashville. All right, well, let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk about you getting into the business, into the music business. So let's talk about your playing career.
Oh, okay. I started playing guitar when I was like 12 and a half, thanks to this band Kiss. They influenced a lot of people, made me want to play guitar, and basically dove into the music industry head first when I turned 18. Simultaneously, I got a job teaching guitar at a music store where I ended up taking lessons when I was a kid. I also worked backstage production at Bogart's, a pretty well-known live music venue in Cincinnati, Ohio, where I'm from. And then I also worked a couple days a week as a salesperson at another music store. So I just kind of dove right in and started performing around town, and mostly cover bands at first, then originals for many years. And been a guitar teacher almost 40 years now. I still teach, just not as much as I used to. I do have two online guitar courses. But back in the 80s, some friends of mine befriended a guy who worked for Van Halen doing their merch. And then he was out on the road with them for a couple years. And then when David Lee Roth split off, he went and worked with Dave, like most of the Van Halen people did. And so my best friend ended up going out on the road with him to assist on the tour. And through that, I ended up working some shows with those guys. So I ended up doing some merch on the side for David Lee Roth, and then Poison later on, because Poison had opened for David Lee Roth. So we kind of knew their merch guy. And then I just kind of, you know, pursued my own musical career, both teaching and performing and writing and recording. Focus a lot on film and TV placements, and I've had several, mostly TV, but a couple indie film things too and stuff. And moved to Nashville in 2008, mostly for songwriting. Dove kind of into the country songwriting market. Studied with some great songwriters here. Wrote with some number one hit writers. Played for them. Played with them. Worked with them. Learned a lot about the craft of songwriting. And recording, having my own studio so I could demo my stuff. And then the country music world kind of changed a bit, both from the business side of songwriting and plus some of the songs that were coming out, and it wasn't really my thing. So started getting back more into the rock thing that I grew up playing here in Nashville. And lo and behold, my friend that got me into the merch thing way back when reached out to me in 2016 and said, "Hey, we could use you for some shows if you're interested. And I was like, well, yeah, I enjoyed doing it. The money was really good. So in 2016, I started working shows doing merch on the side. And since then, gosh, I've worked for like just about everybody you can name. I mean, everybody from Kiss, Iron Maiden, Slipknot, Keith Urban, Luke Bryan, Miranda Lambert. I did Billy Joel and Chris Stapleton recently. I've done a couple shows at the Rolling Stones, did the Motley Crue Def Leppard Stadium tour show. And I also worked before that for Taylor Swift off and on at her warehouse where she has all her merch for a couple years off and on. So I've got a lot of experience doing the merch and I still do that. I do a lot of shows with Alice Cooper when he's in the area. And again, just literally dozens of other bands. So one thing I've always been into merch and I just found a lot of artists and bands just really kind of fall short when it comes to their merch. And so I ended up deciding to take all my experience and knowledge and put together a course to try to help them out called Rock Your Merch.
Before we get into merch, I want to hear more about Taylor Swift's warehouse. So what did you learn from that?
I can only divulge so much because I signed a number of NDAs. You know, they don't like a lot of that out. But I will say, pretty much like Kiss or a lot of other bands, if you can put her name on it, she's got it. I mean, she has over 500 SKUs and 500 pieces of merch, really knows how to do it. She's a very smart person. I did work with her dad, Scott, several times there. He's a brilliant person, a wonderful guy, very, very brilliant on the business side. I actually learned quite a few things from him. But yeah, I mean, you know, everything from obviously like shirts and posters, but you know, she's got her own line of perfume. And, you know, one of the smart things that she does and that all the smart bands with their merch do is they kind of have something like every price point. You know, you've got something in the real budget friendly thing, which makes a nice little add on if you're buying a couple things and, you know, you want to round it up to an even $100 or something on up to, you know, items that cost a couple $100s because sometimes you have those diehard fans that just want those unique things that not everybody else has. But yeah, we did a lot of the mail order fulfillment. And I'll tell you one other thing that was really cool that you know, I have so much respect for her and her team and stuff. One of the other things is like randomly, they would just throw in autographed photos in some of the orders as a nice surprise for the fans. So I thought that was like super cool. You know, they wouldn't even be expecting. They were, you know, actually signed by her. But, you know, just random orders would just go down the line and just toss one here, toss one there. We didn't know who was getting it. So it was just totally random. And, you know, can you imagine, you know, 15-year-old girl open up her package and there's an autographed Taylor Swift photo she wasn't expecting. So I always thought that was really, really cool of her to do.
Did you know Rick Barker?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you know, of course. Yeah. I remember Rick telling me that when he managed her in the early days, that she would spend hours and hours, and when she was doing mall tours, hours and hours talking to her fans afterwards and wouldn't leave until the last fan left.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I met her once before I worked for her. She was just her and her record team. They were doing some live video stuff on Music Row here in Nashville. And I just happened to be driving by and saw her, pulled over and I asked her for a photo. And she, you know, was a sweetheart. She said, absolutely. You know, she said, yeah, absolutely. And she actually grabbed my camera and took the photo herself. So she actually took the selfie with us. So I thought that was pretty cool of her. And
yeah, definitely. Okay. So when we get to merch, you mentioned before about artists don't get it. So what is it that they don't get? What is the problem?
They don't put enough effort or thought into it. The thing I see a lot of times is, you know, especially on the indie level, is bands, they just kind of throw a shirt on a hanger and just kind of hope they sell one or two a night. You know, I mean, they're so focused on their writing, the songs, the music, the performance, which are all important things. And they should be focused on those. So that's very important. But they just kind of treat their merch as like an afterthought, you know, just an add-on to their show. You know, like, oh, yeah, by the way, we've got a shirt over there. And they don't really display them very well. They don't put a lot of thought into thinking of what's going to sell. So they sometimes end up spending a lot of money with boxes of shirts and stuff that they can't even give away because they just didn't do it right. And yeah, just not really putting enough attention on it. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with Banzoog or not, but they've done a couple studies. Their newest one just came out and broke the, like the $1 million mark. And even in this one, merch is, you know, by far hands down the number one income stream for independent artists. The last study they did, it was almost six times as much as everything else combined, which includes digital downloads, ticket sales, fan subscriptions, streaming, tip jar, sync. You know, merch was almost six times as much. So, I mean, that should tell you something that, hey, you know, if you're a band or artist or anybody, even comedians, magicians, anybody, if you got merch, you really need to put some focus into that because that's pr- probably your most lucrative outlet. I mean, you know, bands like artists like Taylor Swift or a Kiss or an Iron Maiden, I mean, they just make a killing in March because they really know how to do it right.
How important is the graphic element involved?
Very important, extremely important. That's one of the things I talk about in my course, is that that's one of the biggest mistakes people make. Indie bands, like, they'll just put their name, their band name on a shirt and hope that everyone's going to want to buy it because it has their band name on it. You know, and sure, you might sell it to your, you know, your friends, your family, your boyfriend, your girlfriend or whatever, but you're not going to sell it to people you don't know when you go to a town you've never played before, just because it has your name on it. Only a handful of artists can really get away with that. And you're talking like the major, major ones. You really need something that's, you know, an eye-catching design of some sort. For example, one thing, like I talk about it. I even have one sitting here. This is my Five Finger Death Punch ball cap. I'm not even a big Five Finger Death Punch fan, but I love that ball cap, so I bought one. I have a Breaking Benjamin shirt. I don't really care for Breaking Benjamin, but I love the shirt. I wear a lot of red and black, and their designs tie in with just my normal wardrobe. So a lot of times I bought merch from people or bands that, like, I didn't necessarily care for their music or wasn't a fan, but because I really liked the style or it connected with me in some way. You know, we've all heard of things where, you know, someone says, oh, you know, hey, yeah, I like that band. Oh, I don't know. I never heard of them. I just like the shirt, you know?
Yes, but you're in the business of merch, so you're exposed to it. How about people that aren't exposed to the merch? I mean, marketing is a big deal on this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like, especially online is a big thing too, you know, with your merch. You know, we all think about like selling merch at shows, but I mean, we all know what happened in 2020 to live performances. You know, everything came to a screeching halt. So, you know, that's the thing, as I say, okay, we weren't able to make a living performing, but if you had merch on your website, you could still, you know, make income that way, but also you'd stay in your fans' forefront. You know, a lot of artists were doing the live stream, and that was great that everyone kind of found an outlet and jumped on board. That was, you know, really, you know, smart thinking. And even that, if you had really good merch on your website, you tie that into your live stream, that boosts your income, you know, right there. Some artists were writing and recording songs, and that's great too. But, you know, how long does it take to write, record, mix, master a song, and then get it out to the distributors to get on Spotify? I mean, you're talking a month or two, you know, to get one out. Whereas if you got someone in the band or a friend who's a graphic designer, I mean, you could have a new shirt every week if you wanted to. I mean, I'm not recommending doing that, but I'm just saying you could feasibly have a new design up on your website or something else, not even just a shirt, but some other piece of merch that you could sell, you know, to still have income coming in and, again, stay in your fans', you know, forefront.
Okay. Well, speaking of which, then, what is the most popular piece of merch? Is it still T-shirts?
It's shirts. Yeah. And that's why I talk about that a lot, but I also talk about like things like there's a lot of unique items and stuff that you can, if you understand your demographic, that you can sell that people will be interested in. You know, there's still other popular things such as like wristbands, hats, bandanas, koozies, stuff like that. But the shirt is, you know, when almost anyone thinks of merchandise, that's the first thing their mind goes to is the shirt. And the other reason why I think the shirt is such an important thing to focus on is because I like to call shirts paid advertising. The difference is you're the one getting paid. Someone is buying your shirt and they're walking around with your band's logo on it. And that's a great conversation starter. Or someone says, oh yeah, I've heard of that band, but what do they sound like? You know, have you ever seen them? And, you know, you start a conversation, and that's so important. I actually had a guy come to one of my band shows once because he was happening to be wearing a Kiss shirt. And so I started talking to him about his Kiss shirt. And I said, oh, yeah, by the way, you like Iron Maiden? No, I love Iron Maiden. Well, I happen to play in an Iron Maiden tribute band. And we were playing like 40 minutes away. So, and this was just at a truck stop. And so, you know, he ended up coming to the show because I told him, hey, man, we're playing up the road tonight. Come see us. And that's what started. It was that T-shirt. You know, was the whole conversation starter.
How important is an image, a graphic on both sides of a T-shirt?
It's obviously can be beneficial. That's a thing where you kind of have to weigh out the cost differential and what you're selling your shirt for, because obviously going to cost a little bit more to do that. The only time I think that really makes a difference for most people who buy merch is more on the bigger level, and they always want the concert dates on the back. So even if you're an indie band and you're an independent band and you're like touring around regionally and you've got a lot of dates worth putting on there, it could be a good idea. It could be something that might help increase sales. Because I know with the shows that I've worked, there's a lot of times someone wanted a shirt and they didn't buy it because there weren't dates on the back. Now, again, that's, you were talking more, you know, arena level acts there, but definitely on a smaller level, that can help, you know, if you've got some dates worth putting, or even a special event, that's always a good thing. You could have like your band, let's say you got your regular band logo shirt that you sell at every show, but now all of a sudden, you know, you're playing on this special outdoor festival thing just for one day. Have, you know, some shirts printed up with that design on the back. And then people have a memento from that one event in addition to having your normal band shirt.
That's a good idea. What merch piece has the best margin?
Usually handcrafted things. If you, if you're not factoring how long it might take you to do it, if you can do something kind of friendly, like, you know, a hand painted item or something, obviously there's not much cost in that. And you could sell it for a pretty high dollar. Paul Stanley of Kiss sells this for thousands, but that's Paul Stanley. But yes, you know, things like that, anything handcrafted, you can generally ask a lot more, and all you've got in it is really a lot of time, you know, your time. You obviously want to factor in that too. You don't want to, you know, sell something that takes you 40 hours to make for $20. But yeah, that's a good way to, you know, have a good margin there for sure.
If you were to advise somebody about doing merch, and let's say they just haven't done it before, what would be the first step?
Make sure you have a good graphics designer for sure. Even if you don't do a fancy design or something on your shirt, just something that looks professionally done. And, you know, it could be, you know, a friend or someone in your band if they're really good at it. There's a lot of, you know, people that do that, you know, sites like Fiverr and stuff like that. You can find people very affordably to do that. And someone that kind of understands what you're trying to achieve with your merch, preferably someone who might be a fan of your music or at least like that genre. That always helps out because then they understand the demographic a little bit more. One of the things I see, and you know, it's funny because I've worked for all these major acts, but even those guys make a lot of mistakes. I mean, there's some that we're just scratching our head going, what were they thinking when they came out with this design? Because a lot of times, you know, they get people who are paid high dollar that are just strictly graphics people that are outsourced from the label or management or whatever. And they come up with what they think is a really cool design, but it has nothing to do with their audience, with the band's, you know, fan base or something, or it just doesn't, you know, click with people. So it's very important that you have something like that, that you have something that's going to resonate. Because what I always tell people is when you're selling your merch, you're actually selling a lifestyle. You know, you have to think about your demographic. That's so important. I mean, someone like Jimmy Buffett, who I've worked before, does a killing in merch. And all of his shirts are like coral and pastel colors. I mean, sure, they got the palm leaves and the beach scene and stuff like that, but just down to the color, you know, that appeals to the whole yacht rock crowd. So, you know, there's all kinds of things like that you have to kind of think about as far as, you know, reaching who your fan base is.
Yeah, Jimmy Buffett's amazing. I mean, he even has a retirement community in Florida now and his own cruise ship. Pretty amazing how, you know, considering it started from one song, really.
And that's awesome because, I mean, artists like that, you know, they're starting to think outside the box. And that's what, you know, a lot of indie artists need to kind of do more of. I mean, yes, the shirt, I think, is still the number one, but there's a lot of other things outside of that, too, you can throw in.
You know, you mentioned before about demographics. Do certain merch items work better in certain parts of the country than others?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cincinnati, where I'm originally from, and I still work a lot of shows up there, we call it a koozie town. I mean, even though they're low budget items, we sell a ton of koozies up to every show I work. As a matter of fact, like literally, we've told the band's merch people, they'll bring us a box of 300 koozies before the show. We'll even ask for more. And they think we're insane. And we're like, no, we'll sell 500 koozies tonight. You know, sizes, that happens. Not to be politically incorrect, but in the South, a lot of people eat fried food. So there's a lot of bigger people in the South. So, you know, you're going to sell a lot of, you know, 3X and 4X, you know, down south. Whereas if you go to LA, where everyone is a fitness buff, you know, you can sell a lot more small and mediums. So, you know, yes, down to the size, things vary from place to place. But yeah, obviously you're not going to sell, you know, many hoodies if you go play the Bahamas, you know, but you're going to sell a lot if you're in, you know, playing Minnesota in February. So
that being said, I was in Jamaica once. It was 75 degrees and everybody was in leather coats and all the natives, they're all bundled up. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you, we sell a lot of hoodies a lot of times at outdoor shows, even during the summer, because like sometimes, you know, it'll be like 80 degrees in the afternoon and then at night, all of a sudden it drops down to 40 and everybody's freezing. So everybody wants a hoodie. So, you know, thinking of things like that is always important, too. Outdoor shows, you know, if you do a lot of outdoor venues, you have rain ponchos. You can sell them for $5 or $10 and you'll just blow through them like they're M&Ms or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So when you're doing the merch thing with various acts, are these just like one-off shows or are you going on the road? with them?
A lot of them are one-offs. Alice, I went on the road with and did a few out with Alice Cooper. But some of my, I've worked multiple shows with, like Kiss, Iron Maiden, Slayer. I've done several shows with those guys. Did a couple with the Rolling Stones. Because I do those more regionally as opposed to actually touring with the act. So anything, I mean, I've traveled about 8 hours outside of Nashville here to work shows. So anything kind of within an 8 hour range. I've done a few in Atlanta, St. Louis, a lot in Cincinnati, Indianapolis, further up in Indy, Michigan, just kind of all over the area.
Yeah, going on the road is another animal altogether.
Yeah, I might end up doing a little bit of that this year just because my friend who got me back into this just said that this is going to be a very busy year for tours and they're going to be shorthanded. So I'm actually scoping out some additional training next week with a buddy of mine here on, because when you're actually working for the band, you do a lot of paperwork stuff. And fortunately with what I've had to do, I haven't had to deal with any of that, but except for my own band. But yeah, so there's some things like that that I might end up going out on the road and do some small tours with some club acts and stuff this year.
Well, speaking of paperwork, I guess it's all electronic now.
Yeah, a lot of it is. Yeah. There's some apps that a lot of them, they use. My band, we use Square, and that's really nice because it keeps track of everything pretty well. But, you know, I have my own little sheets because I handle the merch for my band, and I just like to, you know, have hard copies so I can look at all these different papers and see, okay, this show we did this, you know, what do we sell more of here?
Merch in general, has it changed from when you first started till now?
Prices. Yeah, it has, in that there's more variety of things. You know, back in the day, I mean, it was basically a couple of types of shirts, maybe a bandana and a ball cap. Now, you know, there's those, but there's all kinds of other things. I mean, you know, some of the bigger artists sell guitars, some have coffee, you know, just vinyl, a lot of those nowadays. Just, yeah, all kinds of different items now. It's kind of exciting in a way because every show I work, I'm, you know, so anxious to see what do they got? You know, I want to see all the cool stuff that they have and whatnot. But yeah, there's a lot more variety now for sure.
Do the bigger acts, are they selling CDs as well, just out of curiosity?
Not usually. Some will bring out vinyl because it's kind of more of a unique thing still. Most of the time they don't. Some of the support acts on the bigger tours will. And I'll get back to one really, really important tip on that in a moment. But yeah, most of the bigger bands don't because they just sell so many, you know, CDs online and through, you know, whatever online retailers, whether it be Amazon or Best Buy or whatever. It's a lot of product to kind of carry, and CDs, you know, doesn't take much to add up in weight. So it's a lot of lifting around for a lot of stuff. So not too many of the bigger acts do, but a lot of times, you know, a support act will, and they're really smart to do that. Here's the tip I was going to say. If you're a support band and you get on a bigger bill like that, hands down, the most important thing you can do is after you're done playing is come to the merch booth and sign CDs. There are so many opening bands that were good bands that, like, we sold maybe one or two, and we're talking like a major show while you're playing like 15,000 people. So, you know, sell one or two CDs. Then they announce they're going to be up at the merch booth afterwards, and bam, I mean, we'll sell out 50 or 100 CDs. Wow. Just because they came up and met with their fans and stuff, because people want that. They want to get it signed. They want to go home with, you know, their autograph on it. They're much more likely to buy it. So, I mean, any band, really, you should hang out at your merch booth after your show. I mean, that's just so important. At least someone in the band, even if the whole band can't, someone at least should. But yeah, especially if you're on a support act for a bigger band, I mean, you definitely have to do that. That makes such a difference in your merch sales.
What would be the typical product mix for a support band, for instance?
You mean as far as like how many items or?
Yes, how many items?
A lot of times they are kind of limited, and that's just in negotiations with, you know, the band that they're out in support with. So they might be limited to, like, you know, two shirts maybe and four or five other items. Some of it, they just don't have the budget to have a lot of different stuff. And it kind of makes sense because you're a support band. You don't want to have a lot of stuff that you're having to transport, because one of two things, either, you know, you're paying someone, you know, driving a small box truck to transport the stuff, or you're putting on your tour bus in the bay where it's going to take up more room, or you're actually paying the main band to put your merch on their truck. So you don't want any more merch taking up a lot of space and having to pay, you know, more for stuff that you're not going to sell a lot of. So yeah, a lot of times they're limited, or like a lot of times, like at Monsters on the Mountain, all the bands were limited to two shirts because there were so many bands. I mean, they were like I don't know, like 15 bands a day or something ridiculous. So you can't have, there's only so much room in the, you know, where the merch is being sold in the booth. So yeah, you can't have too much stuff. And so yeah, each of those bands, they were limited to 2 shirts only.
Tell me about your course.
Oh yeah. It's called Rock Your Merch. Like I said, I put it together because I've just seen, you know, artists missing the boat so much on their merchandise with just not understanding what sells, what doesn't, what kind of styles to think about, what sizes, what colors. I have a whole module in there just on building a merch display that looks great and presentable. I actually take them step by step because I made the course actually while I was building the merch display for my band, Power Slave. And so you actually kind of see me do it and then all the changes that I made and then other add-ons. There's several modules in it. There's some just on sizes, styles, understanding your demographic, unique items, high dollar items. Like we touched on here briefly about geography, things to think about when you're in different areas. So it kind of really goes a lot into detail. And I show a lot of examples, of like even some big acts that I've worked for where they missed the boat on things, on the mistakes that they made so that, you know, the independent artists don't make the same mistakes. Yeah. So I just decided to put all this experience together to try to help other bands, because as far as I know, there's no one else out there with this kind of information that they're sharing. So there's definitely a need for it. And with merch being such a big source of revenue, you know, I always tell artists that, you know, if merch is not your number one revenue source, it should at least be in your top three. If it's not in your top three, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
It's such a big, big income source. And it's also just, again, about keeping your name in front of your fans and stuff. You know, not even just someone wearing the shirt as a conversation piece, but someone's looking around their house and they see, you know, that refrigerator magnet on their fridge, you know, or something like that. Or they have the button on the jacket or, you know, a wristband or whatever. So, you know, it keeps you in the forefront of their mind. And then they go, oh, man, I haven't listened to that CD in a while. Let me pop that in, you know. So, again, merch is just so important on so many levels.
Where do you see the merch business going? Or just merch in general? Do you see it evolving, changing? Are there trends?
Not really much that I can foresee, because other than, again, there being a wider variety of items, it hasn't changed a whole lot since I started way back in the 80s. Because again, if you're traveling stuff on the road, you can only carry so much product. Like even my band, we have like 3 different shirt designs, 6 different styles, but we only carry 1 style of each shirt on the road with us because we just only have so much room to transport stuff. We got the rest of it all on our website. And so that's another thing you can do with your merch. You can always have more styles on your website that aren't available, you know, at your shows. We sell just your standard unisex concert style t-shirt at our shows, but on our website, my band, we've got zip up hoodie, pullover hoodie, long sleeve, tank top, ladies cut, ladies V-neck, you know, and different colors too. Whereas at our shows, we just carry black. Because the other thing is too, we don't know which places we're going to sell more of, because most of the places we've only played once or twice so far. But there's plenty of other, you know, variables available on our website. So I think that's something, you know, definitely, you know, artists mixing in more of the online presence with their merch into their live show. You know, that's a smart thing to do. And that's something that we have now, you know, available to do as well. You can have many more items that you can't, you know, carry into a show, or you just maybe don't want to because they're too fragile. You know, some artists will sell like coffee mugs or glassware, and even with vinyl, I mean, vinyl is still a big seller, but God, there's so many times I've gone to show and you just open up and the record's broken. So you got to be careful about that sort of thing. Any fragile items, because if they're traveling the back of a van or a truck, you're hitting bumpy roads, it's getting knocked over and whatnot.
What is the website where people can?
It's rockyourmerch.net. So rockyourmerch.net. There is a free 3-day boot camp that you can sign up for. It covers the 3 biggest mistakes artists make in more detail and shows plenty of examples. So that's something free that anyone can sign up for. And at some point, by the time this is airing, I may have condensed that down to a single workshop. But either way, there'll be something free you can sign up for that gives you all that information.
Okay, last question, Chris.
Yeah.
What's the best piece of advice that maybe you learned along the way or somebody imparted to you?
One of my favorite quotes is, don't fuck the people you meet on the way up because you meet them on the way down too. And that was Ozzy Osbourne in The Decline of Western Civilization, Part 2, The Metal Years. He says it at the end, and that's always stuck with me, and I've always thought that was so brilliant. A lot of times, you know, younger artists, you know, they start to get some fame and fortune and it kind of goes to their head. And, you know, we all have seen now bands that were once big are, you know, now lucky if they can, you know, draw a few hundred people in a theater and stuff. So, you know, it's all cyclical, goes up and down. So, you know, just be a good person to, you know, other bands you're playing with. You know, we're all in this together. Like the saying goes, none of us make it out of life alive. So, you know, just, you know, try to help each other out.
You can find out more about Chris and his merch course at rockyourmerch.net. That's rockyourmerch.net. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. Remember that you can learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news when you sign up for my newsletter at bobbyosinski.com. There you'll also find out about openings for my latest online classes and special events. That's bobbyosinski.com. To listen to the episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, or you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher, Mixcloud, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Radio Public, and Podbean. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.